Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Off the First for today, October the 26th, 2022. I am Ryan Ballinger. Good to have you with us, whether that's audio only or on our YouTube channel or on golfnewsnet.com. Video and audio versions available of the show. We are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort in French Lick, Indiana. We have two stories, two topics to talk about, as the name of the show implies. We skipped yesterday's show of Two Off the First, primarily because I got such a late start on the show from Tuesday that it felt like I would just be jamming it in your face to do two in a row so quickly. So let things simmer a little bit and kind of work through some things, getting GNN Radio ready to roll, which is very, very exciting. And we've got two topics to talk about today. Yesterday, we've got the benefit of Rory McIlroy interview published with the Guardian, which was interesting and worth looking at. And we want to talk about that to kind of start the show. And then we're going to talk a little bit about what happened, or what's about to happen, I guess, with LIV Golf and their team championship in Miami, in the interest of trying to look at least mildly objectively at the actual golf product, what's there, and if there is a there, and whether that's going to actually do anything in terms of popularity or interest level for the product. But we'll get back to that later. So Rory McIlroy is number one in the world again. He's obviously been a guy who has been quite at the fore of whatever's going on between the PGA Tour and LIV. As we've talked about, he has been one of the architects of the changes to the PGA Tour schedule, the creation of elevated events, all of the things that have happened that have really fundamentally changed the way the PGA Tour does business with its top players, and frankly, with every player. And so he's been an obvious voice of that in terms of trying to create a response, not only in terms of business solutions, but also just kind of from a PR standpoint. He's been the guy who has made kind of catty remarks. I mean, when he won at the Canadian Open, make a catty remark, you know, that he got to Greg Norman's total and had surpassed him on the PGA Tour all-time wins list. And he was obviously pretty out front in terms of how he feels about that product. But at the same time, he also kind of goes through these periods where he seems to strike a tone that's different, maybe not as aggressive. And he seems to go back and forth between wanting to take that more aggressive position and wanting to take that less aggressive position. And I think that's something we've kind of figured out about Rory over this last 6 months is that he is heavily influenced in his approach, maybe his thinking, but certainly his approach, by the people he's around. He can be influenced by that. And so when you're around kind of a Billy Horschel kind of guy, or maybe even a Tiger guy who has no love lost for Greg Norman, McIlroy gets a little bit more riled up. He's more likely to say something pejorative about LIV, which is prerogative, is absolutely his. And obviously I'm not the biggest proponent of LIV in the world, so I kind of understand where he's coming from. But then he kind of goes through these periods, or has gone through these periods, where he will spend time with friends of his who maybe have a more sympathetic view toward LIV, or are actively playing LIV, or represent people who are on LIV. And he talks to them and kind of gets to back off his position a little bit that, yes, he has problems with LIV, that doesn't change, but maybe the remedy or the outreach to that segment of the golf world sounds a little bit different. And I think we got the latter of that in this interview with The Guardian. And it was a very good interview. It's well worth reading, not just an encapsulation of that from me or from any content aggregator out there. But I do think it is pretty important to kind of talk through some of the key quotes from the piece. And I think that kind of gives you a sense of the tenor of things. The dynamic that McIlroy has, where he goes and says, you know, we got to stop LIV. And at the same time, if the more peaceful tone, I guess, is not that we have to stop LIV, that the notion of PGA Tour versus LIV can't continue, that's bad for golf in the long haul. And I think that's accurate whether you are for LIV or against, because in the long haul, you're going to create a product that people are going to see is filled with internal strife and that can't identify for itself what's the most important thing. So if nothing's important between the two of them, then nothing's important to the viewer, if that makes sense. So I get where McElroy's coming from, whether he's trying to strike either tone with it. But he says, quote, "This us versus them thing has gotten way out of control already. If the two entities keep doubling down in both directions, it is only going to become irreparable. We are going to have a fractured sport for a long time. That is no good for anyone." End quote. And of course, the Lib folks are going to say, well, you started it. You know, we just wanted to be here and do our thing. And you've blackballed us from playing in PGA Tour events. And you're trying to prevent us from getting official World Golf Ranking points. And you're maybe trying to get us to not play in the major championships. You want us to be pariahs. So why are you saying this now? And in some sense, maybe that's a fair charge. But at the same time, McElroy underlies this point, just as he has repeatedly when he talks about this in this tone of, we need to kind of come together. We need to figure something out without doubling down as much and fracturing completely apart. And that underlying tone is, but you need to do it within the existing ecosystem of golf. We can come up with answers to these problems that don't involve having the Saudi-backed public investment fund, the sovereign fund of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia running this thing, and having Greg Norman, who is quite a divisive figure in the sport, being the figurehead for that. We can do that internally. And he gets into that a little bit later in the piece. And I thought this was, I think, the more salient point that he's trying to make is that we can do this together. We don't have to have a separate concept known as LIV to be able to figure out these problems. He says, quote, "I feel like the place where they have been able to build their legacy, being the players who left, and build their brand, they've just left that behind. If people felt so aggrieved about some things, I'd rather be trying to make those changes from inside the walls than trying to go outside and be disruptive." End quote. And again, he's kind of talked about this repeatedly of that the piece has to come from, if we want to do this, we're going to do this within the golf ecosystem, with the way that we have a structure now that is kind of built to work upon itself. And that includes the PGA Tour, to a degree the DP World Tour, that includes the official World Golf Ranking. All of that stuff is kind of set to work within itself. It's just how it is. I mean, we've got this structure. It's been the same way for more or less 50 years. So to all of a sudden bring in something that is quite different, doesn't fit what has evolved into the current system, it's difficult. Not only from a public perception standpoint, not only from throwing rocks over the boundary to each other, but trying to then put it all back together. And I think there are ways to put it back together. But again, McElroy's kind of prefacing all of this with, if you wanted to do this, why did you have to get the Saudis involved? Why did you have to get Greg Norman involved? If you had so many problems with the way things were being run, then why didn't you just voice them? Why didn't you try to do something about it instead of just complaining about it? And I think that the moment that I go back to is during the Wells Fargo Championship, when there's a ruling that Sergio Garcia doesn't like. He says, I'm not going to have to be here and deal with this BS much longer. I'm leaving this stinking tour. And so I don't have to deal with this. I'm going to get, effectively implying, I'm going to get rulings in my favor and everything's going to be for me, instead of maybe not feeling that way any longer. But I think that's also really, not naive, but giving these guys an out to say, okay, well, if you had problems, if that was your motivator, not the millions of dollars you got up front, whether that was as a total upfront payment or whether that was some kind of advance, you're giving them an out to say, okay, if that's not the problem and you had true grievances, then why didn't you fight harder to get those changed? Because look at what has changed in just a matter of months. And you've got these elevated events. You've got bigger purses that were coming anyway, but not this quickly. You've got a bigger PIP fund. You've got commitments from the best players to get together more often. You have a stronger product because you have more frequent interaction with the best players in the world. You do have a schedule of haves and have-nots, I believe. But you've got a big change in the way the PGA Tour does business and presents itself to the public. And that architected itself really quickly. Of course, you had the threat of LIV. And so then you turn to the folks who are big LIV proponents and Phil Mickelson fans and say, Phil was right. This was a once-in-a-lifetime chance away change the way the PGA Tour operates. He did it. And in some ways, that's true. I think that's absolutely true. So, at the same time, how do you put it back together is my longer-term question. How does this all play out? You've established that LIV Golf exists and is a thing, and they're going to finish their first 8-event invitational series this week. And then what? Does LIV continue to exist like this in perpetuity for X number of years? I think the reality is this business model that LIV has is particularly challenging. We'll get into that in a little bit. But if you see a future where LIV doesn't exist, and I'm sure Rory McIlroy is one of the guys who probably sees that as a distinct possibility, then what do you do? How do you get it back together? Do you take some of the ideas from LIV and kind of welcome the players back as so-called prodigal sons and say, hey, you know, we get it. We get what you did. Do you do that? Do you say, okay, we're going to take some of the changes from LIV and not bring back the players? I think that would probably not go too well from a mending the fences standpoint, especially because, let's be real, a lot of the players who signed with LIV particularly early on are older. By the time this thing ends, they're more likely to have maybe 1 year, at most 2 years, remaining on their PGA Tour livelihoods. For a lot of them, the next step is the Champions Tour. So do you say, hey, we'll welcome you back when you're 50, you can play on the Champions Tour for some of those guys? Do you take a Cam Smith in 3 or 5 years if this winds up ending and saying, okay, we're going to extend the life of your PGA Tour exemption for a couple of years? Or is that an olive branch to offer? You just say, hey, you're back. You're not suspended anymore. You get your pension back. You can work that off kind of thing if you do, you know, X number of events, whatever that thing is. What does that look like? And is this even the time to be thinking about that, the end game of LIV? Or is there still a time for the PGA Tour and its executives and the players who are kind of spearheading these movements to say, we can't think about the end game yet. We've still got to figure out the reality we are in and what's coming. Because there will be a 2023 LIV season. They're going to be, 14 events or something like that. And they're going to have a schedule that starts presumably in February. And you're going to have it run for whatever number of months. And then you're going to have them play the 4 major championships if they're eligible, whatever players theirs are eligible. So they effectively have an 18-event schedule. You've got a PGA Tour schedule that has just as many events, if a couple more, that are elevated events. They're going to have all the top 50 players, basically all the top 50 players, in the field competing for huge purses. That's going to overwhelm some of what LIV does, probably. So what does that mean moving forward? And it's a good segue into the LIV Team Championship concept, which I think is kind of worth getting into as a potential distinguishing factor for LIV's business. But if next year goes as the PGA Tour plans, they're going to have a whole lot more opportunity to connect with fans because they've got the TV deal. They're going to have 20 events that you know are going to have the best players in it. You're going to have events that in the fall are just going to kind of be siphoned off and live on their own. You're going to have a much more compact schedule, relative schedule of events that players and fans are going to know better. And then you're going to have LIV out there doing its thing. If it has TV, it has TV. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But relative anonymity, what they're going to be doing. So does that do wonders for the PGA Tour in this back and forth? Does that give them the upper hand? I don't know. There's still a lot of cards to play, right? We don't know all of that. But if you're trying to game it out, you would think what the PGA Tour is going to do starting in calendar 23 is going to give them an advantage given all the other advantages they have over LIV. That's not money, right? That's not the public investment fund. So that's the transition to the second topic, which is LIV's team championship format. And that's played starting tomorrow, or I guess Friday, at Trump National in Doral, Florida. And the Blue Monster hosts, and they've got this team championship with a $50 million purse. Each winner on the winning team will get $4 million each player knocked out on the teams knocked out in the initial round get something like $250,000 each. So the payout structure is geared toward how team performance works for the week, right? It's not geared toward individual performance necessarily. But the format is to have the 5th through 12th seeded teams play each other in team-based matches with 3 points available. You have a 2-on-2 match, and then you have 2 1-on-1 matches. And the teams that were higher seeded in that first round, 5 through 8, I guess, pick their opponents from 9 through 12 and then set up their matches accordingly. And so Liv's released that, and you can go to their website and check out the machinations of all that if you're interested. Then the next day, the surviving teams, the winners of those matches move on to the next day. Then the top 4 seeded teams enter the tournament. They pick their opponents based in order. They play the same format, 3 matches, 1 point each, no ties. You got to have a winner 2-1 or 3-0. And then those winning teams from the second day, you have 4 of them. They then go to a format on Sunday for the final, which is all stroke play, which, again, is a format, doesn't really do a whole lot to try to identify the best team, right? You played a format for 2 days, and then you completely changed it for the final in hopes of trying to make it somewhat more compelling and interesting to a potential TV partner, I suppose, potentially more interesting to an average golf fan who, frankly, most of us know, doesn't necessarily get as hyped about match play as we'd like to believe they would when they watch the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup. So they're trying to come up with a blend to satisfy that audience that is obviously going to be bigger on Sunday than the other 2 days. That's just the way the golf works. As a format, again, it's not my favorite. It's okay. Match play, I'm rooting for match play. I mean, I want match play more frequently in golf. I want more team play in golf. And so that's a good thing unto itself. And I think having a team structured or some events or some series of events could be interesting in the future of the PGA Tour. We've talked about that on prior shows. But I'm not necessarily convinced that because this is kind of convoluted, it's not as clear to me how this works. And a lot of fans connect with it. I think if you were to do 4 matches in each group, each team matchup, and then you had some kind of sudden death match, if it was tied at 2, then I think you got something better to work with here. Or you have a half point for a tie. I think that could also be interesting. That way you probably have a better chance of avoiding having a 2-2 tie. And then you have some kind of playoff format for those matches. That's what I think I would have done. The team thing I get, having the 2-on-2 matches, that way you have 3. There's no real issues in trying to figure who the winner is. You just have to have a conclusion for all the matches. I get that, but I think I would have stuck with the 1-on-1 match play. That seems to be the better answer here. If you're going to have the 2-on-2 format, then maybe you have that at the start. Like the first round is a couple 2-on-2 matches. I don't know, but it just feels like something's kind of off about it. But it's not meant to identify the best player or team. It's meant to identify fun matchups, right? It's about entertainment. That is the Live product mantra. It is not about high-level competitive golf as you've known it. It is about playing a lot of music during the round everywhere on the golf course, having a more laid-back attitude. So you've got some reflections of that, I guess, based in having players available to wear shorts. Cool with that? No problem. Having players able to use laser rangefinders, they're going to be able to start doing that this week. Again, no problem with that. I think you should be allowed to do that on the PGA Tour every week. Either of those things. I don't see how it makes a difference. Some people should not be wearing shorts when they play golf, and you probably know who they are, but it's okay. That's your choice. That's your fashion choice. I'm totally fine with that. All for that. Same thing with laser rangefinders. Caddies do a whole lot of work speeding things up a little bit by getting out your laser, shooting 3 targets, and then discussing it with your caddy, I think is a good thing. Or letting your caddy do that. Totally cool with that. But I'm not necessarily sure this is going to deliver what they think it will, because you've then decided, okay, this is the way we get to our final 4 teams, then we're blowing up the format, we're going to change everything. People like continuity in their sports. I think that's why they really like what we have now with the Major League Baseball playoffs. The ratings have not been good because the series haven't been particularly deep, and that's the way baseball ratings work. the deeper you go in a series, the more people you attract. But if you have a sweeper or a gentleman sweep, the five-game series, then, or, you know, a 3-1 in terms of a five-game series, then it's harder to build momentum, harder to build audience. But the way that they've built it up now, where you've got multiple rounds to get every kind of, you know, each different type of team, you got 3 games, you got 5 games, you got 7 games, and 7 for the World Series. You got 4 rounds of playoffs, and all of that kind of makes sense. You don't suddenly change the playoffs once you get to the World Series. So I think doing that here is not necessarily in the best interests of LIV. But it's a huge experiment. We're going to see if people are really interested in watching this kind of thing. I think it's been pretty clearly proven at this point that the money involved does not generate fan interest. It obviously has generated player interest, right? But it does not generate fan interest to watch the event. The FedEx Cup continues to go up. The FedEx Cup is only interesting when it's to fans when there's a good finish, not necessarily because the money is on the line. That doesn't do it for people. They're not getting paid, so what difference does it make? So I think for LIV, they have to recognize that no one cares about the money except the players. So they have to put on something that's entertaining, seems meaningful, I think, and then takes on a kind of life of its own moving forward. I think that is the struggle for LIV, is trying to create meaning while simultaneously trying to be entertaining. That is a hard thing to do. It's like the American Gladiators. I was thinking about this today. I love the American Gladiators when I was little. Love watching the show. Love the events. Love the games. Love the Eliminator. All that stuff. Great stuff to watch on Saturdays. But it didn't mean anything. There's no history. It's like, oh, well, our season 3 champion, blah, 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 is in the audience. Who cares? I don't care. I'm just watching this for mindless entertainment. So if you don't have the intention of trying to create a pedigree and history, and you don't have that to start with, it's really hard to kind of latch on to people. It's like the XFL in the same way. Entertaining product to watch on the Saturday or when there's not football season, but does it really matter? No, it doesn't. So that's the balance. If LIV wants to be a successful business model for several years, much less a longer term, they have to find a way to strike a balance between being this entertaining thing that has some modifications to make it shorter and maybe more player-friendly, etc., and making it mean something, making fans care about the investment. And I think that's a very difficult thing to do. They're trying to figure it out. I don't know that they've been successful yet in doing so with a large swath of fans. I mean, I know that to be true. But if they can do it in the long haul, then what Rory talked about earlier is a more difficult task. If they don't prove it very well this week, maybe it gets to be an easier task. So we'll see what happens. I think this is an important week for LIV because this team concept is something they've leaned into, has been curious and interesting for some people watching the product, maybe even observing from afar. But can they turn it into something that means something other than the winner being the team with the most people in the top 5 or 10? Can you do that? And if you can do that, then maybe you've got something for the long haul. All right, that's going to do it for us today on 2 of the First. Thank you so much for watching and listening. If you check us out on a podcast service, please give us a review of 5 stars. Helps us reach more people. We will be back tomorrow with a new show, another 2 of the First for you, and we will see you then. Have a good one, everybody.